again, to remind you, what is a personality? The personality is made up of how you think, act, and feel. And if you keep thinking in the same ways, you can't show up as a new member of the team. And so no matter how small the team is, two people all the way up to a few thousand people, remember that you have to most probably change quite a lot to fit into the team. And that's the hardest part. And I think that's the part that builds trust and builds commitment to the team, is to show how you're willing to change your personality to create a new personal reality that's more conducive to the team and to a more peaceful sort of coherence between the people inside those teams.
Hey, it's me, Sean, producer of The Expansive Podcast. Do you find yourself sharing the pod with friends and colleagues? We know that you love learning with the guys, but did you know you can book John Sonnet or Eric Kruger, or why not book them both to deliver a keynote for your team or organization? Email us at training@theexpansive.com. One more time, that's training@theexpansive.com. Back to the episode.
Welcome to The Expansive Podcast, where we explore the frontiers of personal growth, business innovation, and technology. We believe that growth and progress come from expanding our minds, exploring new possibilities, and embracing change. Welcome to this week's pod. Sorry, we've been off for the last week. We've been trying to get our schedules right, and it just hasn't been working. Thank you for joining us again this week. And I'm always joined by my ever handsome podcast with a podcast co-host with a new mustache you a question. What's happening there, Eric, with the new facial hair that's happening on that facial space of yours?
Do you like it?
I love it. I mean, it really does remind me of Magnum. Magnum.
That's exactly the look I was going for, you know?
Yes, Magnum. I must. How many mustache jokes are there? I mean, I only remember right now, I must ask you a question.
It's going good. Me and my mustache, we've been very busy. I've missed you last week. It was like we just couldn't align our schedules to jump on a call. But otherwise, yeah, it's been busy. It's been good. What's been happening on your side?
Yeah, very good. I've been in three different continents in the last week. Having an excellent time in the States, back in Dubai, back in Cape Town, back in Dubai next week, and just zigzagging the world at the moment and loving every moment of it. I do find myself on huge, huge, huge highs, and then I have to crash. I just have to go and like get into a cocoon for a day or two just to recoup. And so out of that recoup now, and very excited for the week ahead, very excited to be recording this pod, and also all the behind, I mean, I think we keep telling people we're doing so much behind the scenes work for the pod, but actually nothing's changed on the front end, but we are doing a lot behind the scenes. I don't know when it's going to kick in, but eventually it'll kick in, but I'm excited for everything that we're doing for the pod as well.
Mm. Well, I mean, there has been some changes, like the audio is better, the jingles are better differentiation between segments. So small things that are coming together, but yeah, I'm with you on that. And today's topic is all about relationships, right? And it's actually funny because we jumped on the call this morning and we're like, what are we going to talk about? And we had different topics, but when we spoke about it, we realized it's actually more or less the same thing. So I wanted to jump on and talk about the team environment and how do we cultivate a team environment for growth. And you wanted to talk about relationships. And actually, it's kind of the same thing. It is, how do we create an environment in a relationship that is conducive to someone feeling heard, feeling like they belong, and feeling valued?
You know, I obviously, we love dogs so much, right? And I constantly say that I want to be the voice for the voiceless when it comes to dogs. And when it comes to relationships, it's exactly the same as dogs, as in anything that you engage with, the person, the dog, and even the tree, depends how esoterical you want to get, wants to be seen, wants to be appreciated, wants to be held, wants to feel safe. And I know we did a psychological safety pod recently, and it had so much feedback and so many people enjoyed it. You did such a great job with that, Eric. But I think this is just an extension of that, because I think as we evolve through life, no matter how young or how old you are, especially with this unbelievably changing pace of the future ahead of us, people require to be held and heard more than ever. Now, whether you take this from an intimate relationship where it's just one-on-one, all the way up to organizational structures with thousands of people working with them, the common denominator is the human being at the center of it that wants to be held and heard. And I think that we're coming at the exact same topic from two different angles just explains where our hearts are, where our focus are, but how our skills apply to the same sort of focus from different angles. So let's start off with team safety or relationship safety inside the organization, and then let's bring it back down into just an intimate friendship or relationship sort of space and the sort of golden thread between them.
Yeah, so let me kick it off by saying this idea of the team environment has been top of mind for me a lot lately. And we know that, so we covered this in the previous episode. Google ran this project called Project Aristotle, where they looked at 180 different teams to determine what creates team effectiveness. And one of the catch lines that they have in their report is that it's not just about who is on the team in terms of like hiring rock stars, but it's also about how the people on the team interact. And when you think about it, that interaction that we have ultimately creates the team environment. And what I've come to realize is that mediocre teams will leave this team environment up to chance, whereas high-performing teams are more deliberate in scripting what does that relationship look like or what does that environment look like. And of course, you will never have exceptional team performance if you have a mediocre team environment. It's just not going to happen. And this team environment is ever present. It's a space that you walk into that you can feel. It's the language that we use to describe that feeling. How does it feel to be a part of the team? It's the sense of belonging. It is our expectations. It's the social contract. It's the foundation from which we do all of our work. And so it's quite clear, actually, that in our relationships and in our teams, if we want to see those relationships result or transform into a productive output, and productive output here being a valuable relationship, a deep and loving relationship, or just the team accomplishing its mission, if we want that output, then we need an environment that's going to cultivate the behaviors that give us that output. And so we need to be very intentional about crafting it. And I have three different points around how we craft that, at least a starting point for how we craft that sort of an environment. And I think these will apply to relationships, like intimate relationships, friendships, family, but also to teams. Do you have anything that you want to jump in on there?
Yeah. You know, I often think about how I used to approach relationships when I was younger, not realizing the amount of effort it required to build the container in which to feel safe in. And this goes from intimate relationships and to friendships, obviously to workspaces as well. But it really is a science. It really is a practice that we have to apply ourselves to. And, you know, I've been married and it didn't work out. And in hindsight, I realized the lack of structure and focus there was on building it. And so I've been on both sides of it, you know, and so I think it's really exciting to unpack them, verbalize them, and then anchor onto them as a practice so that we can apply it ourselves and also realize that nothing is built without effort. Nothing is built without intentionality and actionability. And so this is great. So why don't you kick it off and then I'll come in with my angles.
So let's start like this. Let me take you through each. We'll do each in turn. I'll tell you a little bit about the starting point for a team. And then once we're done with that, let's talk about how do we contextualize that for more personal relationships.
Yeah, happy.
Cool. All right. So the first one, obviously, is cultivating psychological safety. So I'm not going to go into much depth around this because we covered it in last week's episode. But essentially, what I often see with teams is that they want to start fixing structure, and that's the wrong place to start. And so what I mean by that is, you know, they'll often call you out and they'll say, we need a workshop to work on how do we give each other feedback, or how do we improve accountability, or how do we better manage our time? And these are all structural things that a team need to get right. But often it's the wrong place to start because actually you're not focusing the environment first. And what you'll see time and time again is that a behavior that you're trying to introduce into an environment, if that environment isn't conducive to that behavior, it just squashes it out. And so the environment that we obviously want to see is one of psychological safety, where people feel heard, where they feel like they can speak up, and they can speak up without being ostracized from the group. Now, what's really important here is that when psychological safety is high, people feel a greater sense of belonging. So that already creates a team environment where I feel included. But the more important point for me here is that when it's high, we also tend to disagree more, and we'll have open and honest conversations about what is and not isn't working. So imagine you are trying to fix feedback, right? And you get a facilitator in and you spend the entire morning talking about the best framework for feedback. And you take that back into your team, but there's no psychological safety. The team environment isn't conducive to openness and honesty. What's going to happen? That framework is going to mean nothing because people aren't going to give each other open and honest feedback. So you spend all this time working on the structure, but the environment is like, no, we don't care about the structure. It's not, the environment isn't set up to support that behavior. And so one of the first things, so I wrote in an article that psychological safety is equal parts truth serum and confidence in the team. Truth serum in that when we have psychological safety, we can be open and honest about what isn't working. And so we have the starting point for fixing structural issues, but also confidence in the team that when I bring this to you, you'll receive it with an open heart. You'll receive it in the spirit of us wanting to make things better. So when we have that as a starting point for team environment, a team can grow, fail, be challenged, and ultimately reach its full potential.
Love it. You are, from my perspective, what you're doing is you're building the rules of engagement. It's almost like, is that right? So the environment is the container in which we come in to work things out. And once we have decided that we are teammates and we have decided that we're in this together, there is no internal attacks on each other. There's just the internal discussion to make the team better. And so the rules of engagement are of utmost importance so that we often are able to realize two things. One, you are bringing a situation, a challenge to the table. And two, you are most probably the issue. Mm. And let me explain that. Is in personal relationships, you definitely are the one who's projecting and being triggered. And so you're bringing something up that most probably the other person isn't really being triggered by or has an issue with. And so there's the safety of bringing it to the table, but there's also a deep responsibility to realize that often this is your own shit that you're bringing to the table, and that you need to be also quite responsible for realizing that this is maybe your trigger and your challenge. Mm. So I like the rules, but I also think that it's important to realize that maybe often it's you has this situation or this issue.
And that's actually point number two, is creating alignment, a performance execution framework. So, teamwork and relationships are extremely complex, and we tend to think it's not. We get into a relationship, and over time that relationship evolves and matures, maybe to some degree, hopefully to some degree. But we kind of think that we can just figure it out. We think we don't need any training on how to get those relationships to the best place possible. And actually, when you start listening to psychologists and counselors and people who know, you realize there's so much work that actually needs to go into creating those relationships, but also, obviously, creating a team that is highly functioning, because teams are insanely complex. And so what's the number one thing that we need for a team to be highly productive? We need alignment. And the reason we need alignment is because a team is full of people who have diverse backgrounds, diverse perspectives, their own stories, their own beliefs, but we put them together and we want them to move in a certain direction and accomplish a certain mission. Without alignment, that doesn't happen. And so one of the most important things we can then do is to create some sort of a performance, I call it performance execution framework, which just means out of all the things that we can focus on that's going to help us be the best possible team, what are the three or four most important ones that will help us to get where we want to go? And I find this, like, I've been fascinated by this for the past few weeks, and I have so many examples of this, where you can go from, like, individual to team to organization to country, and I can give you examples of these frameworks that emerge and that ultimately lead to transformation. I'll give you one quickly. Do you know the story about Singapore?
No, which one?
Well, just like their transformation, Singapore's transformation.
Why don't you tell everyone?
They, in 50 years, they went from being a third world country to being a first world country in 50 years. They had a GDP per capita of $500. This was like in 1970 or something. It was akin to like Kenya, for example. And then in 50 years, they grew that to like $55,000 GDP per capita. So they were the fourth largest in the world. And this transformation is insane, you know, like to take a country from that to this first world phenomenal modern country seems like an impossible feat. But when you listen to how they did this, they had a very specific approach. It was called MPH, meritocracy, pragmatism, and honesty. And so what this means is that once you have this framework, everything can run through it. So meritocracy means best person for the job. Like, you're not going to hire your friend or your cousin or like a family member. Best person for the job. Pragmatism. We're not going to reinvent the wheel. We're going to learn from other countries, see what they've done, and we're going to copy that into our environment. And H, honesty. Zero tolerance for corruption. Zero tolerance. The prime minister was known for saying that if you want to keep a third world country, it's going to be due to corruption. And so everything that they did was around this formula and this filter. And of course, there are many other things they did, but you can see how this gives people a filter, or it harnesses attention and focus in a specific direction. And so because we have that, we can all move, we can all align around specific principles and ideas. And so this really speaks to what you were saying earlier. So obviously in teams, you know, I think this is a very important thing to do. We have to script out what does this alignment look like. But it's the same in our relationships, is that we have to script out what are certain things that are important to us as a couple or as friends or as partners.
What would you say is one of them that you have with your wife? Like, relate that back into a personal sort of setup with your missus.
What is one specific one that we have?
Yeah. That she must clean the dog shit. I'm just joking. That was a story off air. That was a personal joke. I'm so sorry that I brought it up here.
I think one that we recently created is around money. And this is probably one of the arenas that relationships need to be the most clear about, was around spending money above certain thresholds and having
yourself,
joint
Eric.
Conversations about it.
No, you're talking about yourself.
It was obviously it was a rule created for me.
Your wife had to sit down with you and have a discussion that you're spending the family fortune on technology, Eric. Oh my God.
I was trying to
Somerset's
keep it.
Somerset's house husbands. It's quite impersonal. Yes. It's all about you, Eric. Yes. So your wife sat you down and said, there's a rule here, Eric, that we need to start. But it's a good topic.
Joint rule. It's more of a joint rule. Yeah. But so I think relationships are one. I don't know if this counts as a rule, but like we have a rule around time with the dogs. So, like, you can't book time into my diary between 12 and 1 most days with her too, because that's when we take the pups out for a walk.
But what about the money one? Just go back to the details of it. What was the construct?
Well, no. I mean, that was kind of it. Is that certain spending above a certain threshold is something that we discuss before we actually pull the trigger on it. And I mean, this is also because we have. And this would be part of the process, is we've set goals for ourselves as a couple. And it's easy to not do that. That you set your goals, I set my goals. And actually for a while, we kind of struggled to do that, to be honest. We would set them, but just then kind of let it slide by the by. Whereas now we are much more intentional with it. And when you come in, like when you finally come and visit me, like after my, I don't know, 500th invitation to you, then you'll see, because I mean, like, it's too far to come and visit, right? When yeah, you're like 30 minutes away. So when you walk into the kitchen, against the fridge, there's a thing that has our words for the year, both our words for the year written on it. It has our goals written on it. And it's nice to be able to create those together and then to also have them top of mind all the time in a space where we both operate.
I love that. Love that. So what happened was the boss had to call in petty cash spending because the staff was running wild amok. that's actually what was going on. Well done, Dan, for reining in Eric's wild spending. Okay, so that's really good. I mean, I love that alignment of goals. And I guess, I think for me, it's one of them is being patient with each other is a sort of alignment of what it is to actually be in a relationship is actually being patient with each other. It's like, okay, I see this is something going on with that. Let me hold space for you as you go through it. And then also aligning to the common goals that I think in relationships are so very important so that you align your intentionality, you align your vision with each other. And exactly the same as an organization where you have thousands of people or hundreds of people that need to all be aiming towards one scenario. I remember in my restaurants when I was much younger, the aim was, is your customer happy? I don't want to know about the politics between you and the griller. I don't want to know about anything else. Like, you can't not have change and cash flow with you because otherwise you're not worrying about the customer. So there was always just one thing we focused on, you know?
I love that.
And so I think this, this alignment is so, so very key. Okay.
To that point, alignment can be, can look different in different situations. So I love a one-liner that aligns us, like one question or one statement, and we can all align around that statement. And then there are situations where it might become slightly bigger, not more complex, but just slightly bigger. So, you know, you look at the Singapore example, you have these three different things. You look at Amazon and Amazon's flywheel, they have like 4 to 5 different things that go into that. But the thing that's true about all of these alignment statements or alignment questions or frameworks is that they are easy to remember. And that's key here because it doesn't help that we talk about alignment. Because think about this. What do we often do in companies? We create a value statement. And I mean, I'm not going to rag on about this because like it's one of the most cliche things that we can talk about by now, that we create this list of 10 different or 15 different values that go onto the website and that we never actually see in the company.
Ever.
Like if you ask anyone, they can't rehearse or recite that. And so like, it's kind of pointless. Like something that truly aligns you means that I know exactly, like if you wake me up tonight and you say to me, like, what is the most important thing? It's like, is my customer happy? Okay, good. Like, because now every decision that you're going to make, every action you're going to take is going to be filtered through that. I can be happy about that. There's one from the Savannah Bananas. It's quite a fascinating story about this dude who turned around a baseball club. He took over a baseball club and then turned it around. And one of the ways he did that is to introduce a lot of entertainment for the club. And so like they became the Savannah Bananas. Everything was about like they incorporated bananas into like every facet of the brand. Everything is yellow. There's people dancing. I think they call them the Banana Nanas, something like that, where like it's these like older people dancing in banana costumes. But anyway, like he turned this into a huge, huge business. And his simple thing that he aligns people around is fans first, entertainment always. And so like I've been reading the book about how he's built that, and he tells these stories about baseball players that would sit with fans for like long periods of time, like way longer than we'd expect it from them. And then he's like, but why did you do that? And he's like, well, didn't you say fans first? And so it's so clear. And the more we have this in our relationships as well, the better. And the problem is that you might have this mental model. Like if I have this mental model of how a relationship should be and what we should be aligning around, that's fine. It means nothing if it's not a shared mental model. And that's why it's important for us to have these discussions and to be quite clear and explicit about what it looks like.
Yeah, very good. Okay, I like that. That's alignment. Let's go to the third one.
So the last one we've actually kind of covered in the process, which is tabling the team operating system. And this maybe is just, you know, to be even more explicit as what we've just been talking about, to really categorize it. So when we think about a team operating system, or let's say like when we look at collaboration, there are many different facets of collaboration. There are the roles and responsibilities of the team members. There's how do we deal with accountability? How do we give and receive feedback? How do we measure performance? And the more clear we can be about each of these, the better. And again, you know, something like feedback in a team is often just, oh, we sit down and we talk about what's working and not working. We don't have a structure for how to do it. And we never get trained on how to do it. And so it always feels like someone is attacking me when they're giving me feedback because we haven't scripted that this is the way that we do it and this is what we want to see happen in the team. And Brené Brown has this saying that says, clear is kind and unclear is unkind. And that's what the team operating system does, is it gives you, like, it gives you the structure. This is how we do things. But what this, how we do things, what that does is it gives you clarity. Like, you know, like when I show up to the team, this is how I'm going to give feedback. This is how I'm going to receive feedback. This is how we're going to have accountability conversations. And all of that removes something which people hate, which is uncertainty. And we have a lot of uncertainty to deal with in the world around us. The last place where we want uncertainty is in our teams and in our relationships. So how do we remove that? By being more clear in our communication about what we expect from how we show up as a member of that team or a member of that relationship.
Yeah, you know, that it goes back to, I guess it's just a theme that you and I kind of stuck in, because last time we spoke about engineering the life we want. And it's exactly the same thing here, is that how much effort are we putting into behind the scenes and into the operating systems of how we show up personally, and then also how we show up inside relationships, and how are we held accountable to those relationships? And that accountability and that level of integrity is a full-time job, because you're like, this is, you know, like I was speaking to Wendy and we were just talking about certain characteristics that I have that I know are not conducive for long-term relationships. And one or two that she brought up, I had to really take a moment to understand the neuroscience of change. And I think it was such an aha moment for me. You know, Dr. Joe Dispenza calls it moving through the refractory period or crossing the river of change. And what this means is that when you've decided to become somebody else, or you've decided to show up as a team member or a partner in a more, I don't know, kind way, you have to realize that many, many of those ideas are not well entrenched in your head. And so what you have to do is you have to now change behavior. And when you start to make a decision to change behavior, you start to cross the river of change. And as you start to cross this river of change, what happens when you're in a river? You have currents, you have rocks, you have things that are taking you off balance. And so you have to keep reminding yourself, sit with the new behavior that you are wanting to quite literally rewire and refire within your brain, in your hardware of the gray matter inside your head. And so we also have to realize that making this commitment is the easiest part of changing the behavior. Because once we start to cross the river of change, the real hard work starts, because your body just wants to go back to familiarity. Your brain just wants to go back to where it's happy to go to. And so this weekend was quite a thing, because I had to quite literally sit there and think about thinking in a new way and showing up in a new way as a better partner and a better team member. And so as we start to practice these psychological safety scenarios, realize that maybe they're not part of your existing personality. And again, to remind you, what is a personality? The personality is made up of how you think, act, and feel. And if you keep thinking in same ways, you can't show up as a new member of the team. And so no matter how small the team is, two people all the way up to a few thousand people, remember that you have to most probably change quite a lot to fit into the team. And that's the hardest part. And I think that's the part that builds trust and builds commitment to the team, is to show how you're willing to change your personality to create a new personal reality that's more conducive to the team and to a more peaceful sort of coherence between the people inside those teams. So yeah, it just seems like it's a topic that you and I are focused on in different ways.
Yeah. Look, but I'll say two things in closing. Number one is, well done for you guys having those difficult conversations to start with, because it's the difficult conversations and the way that we respond to those conversations that create the psychological safety. And having the psychological safety means we are more likely to have these difficult conversations, which means we are more likely to deal with things before they become problems, which creates more psychological safety. And that's the kind of environment that we really want in our relationships, but also in our teams. And it's a tough first step, I think, for many people. But having that difficult conversation and having the openness, not being judgmental, not defaulting to blame, but approaching it with curiosity, is such an important step that's going to help us create psychological safety in the long run. So that's just one thing that I wanted to mention. And then the second thing, just in closing out, the one thing that I read that I think had the biggest influence on my personal relationship with Danica over the, I mean, we've been together now, I think, for about 9 years. She'll correct me, but I think it's 9 years. And I can, if I'm honest, you know, we've had an amazing relationship right through. We've never had big fights. I think we are just, we're so aligned and compatible that, and I think none of us hold on to grudges. So we've always had a great relationship. But the thing that I heard early on, and I read it somewhere, that changed my relationship was this quote that said, "He loved her, of course, but more than that, he chose her every day." Mm. And if I had to give someone some like advice for a relationship, I think it'll be that. It's you have to choose the person every day, because choosing is a very intentional thing. And when we become intentional, we align our behaviors and the way that we think about them and the way that we approach them in a different kind of way.
Wow, that's a wonderful, wonderful way to close the pod. And I think it's also very indicative of making a commitment to a team, you know, is you choose to be part of that team. And if you choose to be part of that team, it's a commitment. It's going to take work, accountability, and engineering. So thank you so much for sharing those, Eric. And thank you for sharing some of your personal life, which is not common for you, Eric. So I'm very...
It's not. Thank you for teasing it out.
Yeah, I'm so happy I did, because I don't even know much of your personal life. And I'm so very proud that you've had such a great relationship 9 years in. I mean, that's a long... You've got two kids. They look exactly like you and Dan.
That's a long time.
I mean, your dogs look exactly like you and Dan. So they're both hairy, like both of you. Well, with your moustache, I mean, you look much more like your dogs now.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for joining us on the Expansive Podcast this week. As always, if you enjoyed it, please do share it with a friend. We are growing every week and every month, and we want to thank all our new listeners from all over the world. Sandra, who messaged me on WhatsApp telling me that psychological safety and softening in leadership should be actually called feminine leadership. Eric, I should actually send you a voice note. She's like, "Guys, why don't you just call it feminine leadership?" I was like, "Damn it, you're right. We should have. Maybe just supposed to be two guys," and we didn't. But Sandra, all the way from Michigan in America, thank you so much for sending that voice note. I love you so much. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Cancun. And anybody else, if you have enjoyed this pod, please do go and leave us a 5-star rating or subscribe to us on YouTube. We are always looking to grow and expand the Expansive Podcast. Until next week, ciao.